Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Well, it's been a week. A mother who everyone agrees took her three children out of this world is sitting in a courtroom in a wheelchair. Her ex-husband, the father of those children, just spent 2 days on the stand telling the jury he never saw her harm the kids, that she got worse and worse in medications, and her doctors kept switching medications, and then he begged the public to forgive her. The prosecution played his 911 call. Jurors watched Lindsay Clancy sob while the man she sent out for takeout screamed that she killed his children. Both sides agree on what she did. The only question left is the one that has divided every single person following this case. Did she know what she was doing? That's a big question. You guys have a lot of questions. Today on the program, it's a listener question and answer. We're going to do this case. We're going to talk about Nolan Wells. We're going to talk about David, but we will be starting here with the Lindsay Clancy case, and I'm going to put up a graphic right there like that, because I'm sure Todd's in the background going, you got to change your graphic.
I was.
There we go. And to help us go through it today, Robin is off at a speaking engagement. Coffin Daffer is at a speaking engagement. So you got us. You got Lisa and Todd and myself. Bob may come on at some point. Bob's flying back. So it's a free-for-all today as we discuss this. We welcome your thoughts, your questions, whatever you want us to discuss on these cases in the comments section over here on YouTube. And we will try to answer whatever we can about this case. One of the big questions, this is just taken directly from our social media. I'm just going to throw it out there. This is a listener. I got a new prop here in the studio, the phone. Should I ask it like a caller?
Sure, go ahead. Sure.
I keep going back and forth on this.
This sounds kind of weird and creepy.
just a little bit.
I'm just gonna read it. I keep going back and forth on this. Patrick says she heard a voice telling her to kill the kids, but she didn't mention that voice until a week after. If you're truly psychotic, wouldn't that be the first thing you say, or does the delay make it sound like she's building a defense? Danielle asked that on Instagram. I got my thoughts on it. Todd, let's start with you. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think my first thoughts are a couple of things. I can see where people might lean into that a little bit and think, you know, that's exactly what she's doing. Why didn't she mention something prior to her killing her kids? No. But I also have to say this, if you're going through mental anguish, whether it's depression, whether it's psychosis, what, sometimes you don't want to talk about it. Like sometimes you're so embarrassed by the situation that the last thing you want to do is admit, hey, you know what, Patrick, you know, I'm speaking for Lindsay, you know, Patrick, I'm hearing voices. Like I don't know in my life, and I've never heard voices, let me just say that up front, but I'm not sure that I've ever really shared truly everything about my own mental health my entire life. So I think that'd be it's a big stretch to think somebody's just going to stand up and go, you know, I've been feeling this postpartum stuff. Now I'm hearing voices. It might be a big leap to expect her to just turn to Patrick and tell him that.
Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, of course, I'm hearing voices. I need help. People are afraid to say that sort of shit out loud. And and you can say it's right or wrong. You know, I mean, obviously, if she had said it earlier, would there have been more help? I don't know. I don't know that it would have made a damn bit of difference, because she was pretty clear on like her feeling like shit, and saying that she's thinking about harming the children. I mean, there was, she put the warning signs out there. I don't know that hearing the voices would have changed a whole lot in terms of how the medical community would have responded to her, quite honestly, because they didn't respond correctly to the information they already had. But I think that is the reality. I mean, people, the person who knows about our mental health the closest is us, our own individual selves, about our own selves. You know, even if I think you try to share it with others necessarily, you're not always going to get it all out there. It's hard to verbalize. It's hard to fully express and have someone else fully understand what it's like to be you or me or any individual person. But even in a case like this, where it does seem that it was put out there pretty extensively, there is going to be a fear factor. People are going to have motivating reasons not to share that sort of information. They don't want to be looked at like they're crazy, even if she's suspecting she might be. And by her Google searches, she was seemingly wondering if she was a sociopath, the way she was looking things up. So I can understand it. Lisa, what are your thoughts on that one?
Well, this is very interesting to me on so many different levels, but in the United States, we have such a stigma against any sort of mental health problems.
Yeah.
We're stigmatized. People with schizophrenia are stigmatized. People who have bipolar disorder are always held up as, oh, they have bipolar disorder, which I believe she was later diagnosed with.
Yeah.
And what is so hard for people to believe is just how much these medications do mess with your brain. If you have bipolar disorder, you should not take an SSRI, which is a serotonin reuptake inhibitor. You should take those because they affect bipolar differently and cause psychosis. And a couple of the medications that have been mentioned that she's been on are SSRIs and SSNIs. And I know this is all technical stuff, but as a person who has dealt with somebody who has mental health issues her entire life, I can tell you all those medications will do something different to the brain chemistry. And these voices could have come on that day.
Yeah.
It's not like they're sitting there. And she never had the chance to mention it.
Good point.
It's not, it's not like a kind of like,
hey, I want you to do something for me. I need you to go get an Arch Deluxe from McDonald's. I know they don't have them anymore, but go ask for the Arch Deluxe. You're going to have a lot of fun with that phone.
Yes, you're going to have too much.
But that's the thing. I mean, they can come on. They can go. What's baffling to me about this case is it's almost like we're playing with a deck of cards where we're just pretending that certain ones don't exist. It's like, no, like the medical community is pretty grounded on this, that if you take this and your brain is this way, these could be the negative side effects. It's well documented. There's literature about it. So here's a prime example of it happening. And we're like, nah, can't be that. Wait, what? Like, why would it not be that? Clearly, it's that. Like, here's what happened. Like, why are we pretending that that's suddenly not a thing? Because it makes us feel better that we're going to lock away the evil woman who killed her children? It's horrible. She knows it's horrible. But it's I don't know. It's kind of clear as day. Like, yeah, this could be the horrific side effects. This is why we have the warning labels. This is why 85% of the prescription drug medication commercials are filled with disclaimers because of shit exactly like this.
And that's exactly what I was going to mention. I mean, how many of those mental health prescriptions that are advertised quite regularly on television and whatnot have these huge lists of side effects that are mental and that might affect their mental health? And I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but as I said, as somebody who has dealt with trying to find the actual medications that will work in this instance, it is trial and error. You're going to put on a medication and hope against all hope that this one works. And then 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days down the line, you're realizing this is not working. And in that time, you're still dealing with all the mental health issues that you have. It does, you know, these medications don't work immediately. It's not like taking a Vicodin and in 30 minutes, you're not going to have pain in your knee. This is something that takes a long time.
And it goes layer upon layer because you got your mental health problems. Okay, you're going to take this medication to help it. Okay, so there's that. Well, this one's not working. We're going to try on this one. Okay, well, you want to do this one. Then we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to lower this one while you're taking this one. So it's going to be kind of a cross effect here while you're adding this one in. And this may not work. We're not quite sure because it's going to take a little bit of time to determine if that one works. And that one doesn't work. So we're going to add this one on and you're on top of that. Meanwhile, you still got this whole river of shit flowing down here. But this is all wick wavy and inconsistent. Yes, it's going to cause people to do crazy things. That's what happens. I'm just really baffled why it is, you know, up for debate so much on this, other than people who've never faced dealing with any of it. And that might just be it. And that's why I've been saying bless your heart so much.
You know, in the true Southern way. But yes, they just don't know. They have healthy brains, so they can't fathom that there is something back there that is talking to you that is not you. Or they can't fathom that there are actual problems that you can't think straight. You can think straight. You can go to school or work every day and seem completely and totally normal, if you use that term. But still, you're suffering and dealing with all this stuff in the brain. So this is one of those things. People don't talk about it. People don't know. But I think everybody is so emotionally invested in the fact that these were three babies, three children, three innocents that were killed. So that's where all this emotion comes in. You got to take all that emotion out and just look at three deaths, yes, but don't sit there and go, oh, they were babies, so she must burn in hell.
I think she's in her own hell right now.
She's
never getting out of. I mean, we've seen so many cases where you have a defiant, you know, screw the world defendant who's done horrible things to their family, their children, whatever. This isn't one of them. It just isn't. Watch the case. It's not. It is just not that. Here's another one on this. So the prosecution made a big deal about showing 9 prescription bottles that were still mostly full. If the whole defense is that she was over-medicated, how does it help them that she apparently wasn't even taking all of it? Again, this is like one, this is such an easy to explain thing, but it seems so baffling for so many. And again, bless your heart. I'm glad you've never been in this situation with any of this shit. How does it work like that? It's kind of what we just talked about. Oh, you need this? We're going to try you on this. We misdiagnosed you. We're going to put you on this. And we're still currently misdiagnosing you. And that doesn't work. Okay, well, let's switch over to this one. It's what I was just saying. We're going to take you off this one. We're going to put you on that one. That's not working either. She gets frustrated. She's already not in a good mental state. She's not making good decisions. She decides herself, I'm not going to take this one. This isn't working for me. I got to talk to somebody else that maybe will get a better grip on what's going on, because these people have now have a track record of not helping me. She goes to another provider. That provider doesn't talk to the other provider. Take some of this. Okay, I'll take some of that. That's how you end up with 13 different prescription bottles and only a little bit taken out of each one, because you keep trying a different one that the next provider is telling you to take. There you go.
Exactly.
Peter, exactly. One of the things that I noticed too is I watched the chat very closely on our lives, and there's a segment of people who say, well, she didn't follow her doctor's instructions. Okay. She should have taken the pills the entire length of time, blah, blah, blah. So there's that mindset. And then there's a group of people who say, well, it's up to her to read all the side effects from all the prescriptions and understand all that. So part of them are putting it, But in both cases, they're putting it on her. Like, it was her responsibility to understand the reactions that it would have on her body in conjunction with the meds that she was already taking. But if that's the case, if she was supposed to know that, Shouldn't she also be in charge of deciding which ones were right and not right for her? Like, I can't see both sides.
She's
can't
already
be the same thing.
She's already operating with the broken brain.
Right.
So you got that going on. Like, if anything, it's funny to me to a certain extent, because I feel like the prosecution doesn't realize they're digging a hole for themselves. They're just not quite seeing this. Where, like, by arguing this point, you are arguing, well, why didn't she do this? Because she wasn't operating with a full deck of cards. That's why, from the beginning. So you're expecting that she's mentally capable of handling all these decisions and making these choices about her brain's mental health that's already not functioning well. And then we're going to medicate it up and medicate it down on this one and that one and go, well, we hope you're still making the best choices for yourself with your broken brain. And now that we fucked with the 30 ways to Tuesday with these meds, well, why would you not be thinking clearly? Gee, I wonder why she wasn't operating clearly. And it's the burden of the state to prove that she was operating clearly. Well, they just keep doling out evidence of why she wasn't. It's like, what are you arguing here? Like, clearly, take postpartum out of it. I mean, yeah. If you do this to anybody, I wouldn't be trusting that person to sign a contract.
Here's my point. And High Plains Hounds just said it. Every month I get new medications.
Yeah.
Have you ever read that book that comes with your medications?
It's the cover our ass book. Yeah.
Yeah. They look at it and they go in the garbage, you know, unless you're being put on a new medication or you're somebody that's really, really, really trying to get into this. The thing is, those of us who are prescribed aren't the doctors. We're not the pharmacies. We don't have the knowledge of what it's going to do to our brain. The only thing we have is how we feel.
Yeah. I see somebody, she's also testing positive for weed is not helping her mental issues. Did she test positive? I don't know that she did. I haven't heard that yet.
I saw something that she did test positive for THC. Ooh,
guess THC, what? That ain't going to do shit. That's not going to do anything.
The THC, it's reported that she took it as a gummy a day or two earlier to relax and to sleep.
Clearly, again, it's just someone who doesn't understand what these things are and how they work and how they work together. Taking weed is not, again, it's just, I'm sorry.
And
your argument is falling on deaf ears because it doesn't make any sense.
And anytime you take a THC gummy, by the way, if you're doing it that way, it will stay in your body much longer.
I fucking live on them. So, you know.
I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying that it will stay in your body longer.
It's just this. If that was the only thing she was taking, none of this would have happened, probably. Right. You know, that's the thing. I don't know. I am baffled by it. I hope. I'm just getting so frustrated with this case because it's just, I don't know. This seems pretty black and white to me. This cause and effect happened. It's horrible. It's sad. God, I mean, but this isn't Lori Daybell by any stretch of the imagination. One more on this. This is what I can't get past. She says she ordered the takeout. She texted him to stop at CVS for kids' medicine. She timed when he'd be gone. This is their take. How does the defense explain all of that planning and still say she was in psychosis? Because from where I'm sitting, a psychotic person doesn't set a 25-minute timer on her husband. Yeah, they actually do. Psychotic people in psychosis, they're not sitting in the corner shaking all the time. They're driving the cars next to you. They're at the grocery store. They're calling in. Oop.
They're calling into the radio show. I can hear you in my feelings.
They're everywhere you want to be. And I think that's a very uncomfortable thing for a lot of people to wrap their mind around, that there could be people in active psychosis every day all around you. They are. So even though that's an icky thought, it is what it is. People under active psychosis they're not vegetables, I guess. I mean, again, it's kind of a black and white answer, but it is what it is. And I'm surprised.
It's not like the old days of insanity and insane asylums where you see somebody sitting there doing this.
Yeah.
Because psychosis is what's going on in your brain, not what's outside. And you can plan stuff very well.
Yes.
Very thoroughly when you're in psychosis, but you don't realize that it is your brain telling you to do these things, not your soul.
Based in reality. Yeah. I mean, it's cognitive distortions that you're basing your decision-making on. So, and it can be anything. It can be something as horrible as you're going to kill your children. It could be, there's a secret message for me in this book from Robin, and he wrote it to me just specifically, and it's on this certain page, but I have to find it, and I don't know what it is because my brain is telling me that it's there. That's a cognitive distortion. I'm believing that it's there. I can sit down and plan all afternoon. I'm going to read every page of this book to find the secret message that Robin wrote to me in it. He didn't write a secret message to me in it. But if I have a cognitive distortion that tells me that that's there and my mind is not in the right place, it's going to go down that road. I can sit and plan all sorts of shit. I can plan to call him. I can plan to go outside his house and then call him in the middle of it.
I know you wrote something for me in that book. What did you write?
You know, and then you're really fucking creepy and weird really quick. I love this phone. But that's what that is. That's a cognitive distortion that then takes on a life of its own. You can plan shit out in psychosis. That you can.
Very much so.
You can. And I'm sorry the education system has failed everyone so much that no one has any fucking clue on how any of these things work. Or maybe they're blessed enough that they've never had been that fucking close to it.
I don't know. Because it's mental health.
Yeah.
Because it leads into mental health. And I don't think any of the quote unquote normal people of the world really understand the problems with mental health and broken brains.
Yeah. What's your take on it? I'm going to throw this one out there. This is one I've seen in our comments and in other places as well. Are we looking at this case in a fair light? Because I've seen some people argue if this were a man that had done this to his family and the tables had been turned, we'll be looking at it the same sort of way. I don't think you can make that comparison. Because men don't go through postpartum depression or postpartum psychosis or have the chemical change that goes on in your body with your hormones and shit after giving birth to a child. And we don't experience that sort of hell that some women have to go through. So I think it can be made in some ways of, I mean, yes, if there's a guy that was going through something, whatever it may be, and they were medicated this irresponsibly and this horribly and they did it, I think I'd be having the same conversation. If we were to look at it that way, we just haven't had a case like that, quite honestly. But again, it's not apples to apples here because the underlying condition we're talking about is something that was brought on because of the fact that she's a female who had just had a child.
That's what I was going to mention because this is something that we did talk briefly after the show about yesterday. Because there's not that motherly connection with fathers and their kids. Yeah, fathers who kill their kids, they're nasty, they're evil, they're monsters, we get all that. But for some reason, she's being held to a higher standard, I think, because she is a woman and because she's the mother who gave birth to these children. Mm-hmm. And I think if it was a man, we'd still call him a monster and all that, but if there was history and evidence showing that there was something going on with the medication, that there was mental health illness, I think a lot of people would be more open to accepting that and looking for a different outcome with the trial.
Because I'm seeing a lot of comparisons to who's the guy who burned the house down with his family and Chris Watts.
Yeah.
I'm seeing comparisons to that. I'm seeing it's like he also didn't go to 30, all these different, you know, doctors and have 13 medications and was failed 500 ways to Tuesday. He just decided to go do that shit one day. You know, was there mental health problems beforehand that he should have been helped with? Yes, but he also didn't raise his hand and try to get help. She did. That's the huge difference here. She did.
I saw somebody compare it, and this was just popped up a second ago, mentioning Nick Reiner.
Yeah.
So, here's the difference there. You've got somebody who is diagnosed with schizophrenia and other mental health problems who decides they are going off their meds. Mm-hmm. That is a different situation than somebody who has no idea why all of a sudden they are hearing these voices.
Yeah.
And are feeling these feelings of wanting to harm or not knowing or crying all the time. If they don't know and they're trying to get the help, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if they are already diagnosed on a plan that's supposedly working,
yeah,
and then they stop, that is their fault.
I think Nick Reiner is another one that was filled by the system too, but there was more, you know, selective choosing of what he wanted to participate in his own recovery and not. So there's a difference there, definitely. But it's also an indictment on the system for his parents, because the options are, well, he can go be homeless under a bridge, or you can take him in, or he can go die. And that's kind of it. Like, he wasn't going to be in a state mental hospital, didn't qualify for that. There's not really, that doesn't exist very well.
No, they don't.
So, I mean, the options are homeless and die on the streets, or the parents who have money put him in their guest house. I think most parents are going to put the kid in the guest house, if they have a guest house. Most of them it's in the basement. So it's an unfair comparison, but at the end of the day, it's still an indictment on our society in our country of how up we think we are with people, and how great we think our medical system is, and how much it has to grow and learn from its mistakes, especially in the area of mental health, and how behind we actually are to what we already do understand about it. But what we choose to accept about it is a very different thing than what we mm-hmm. understand about it. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in as we continue to follow that case.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
All right, I want to talk about something because somebody brings up the Lindsey Clancy trial. It seems like anytime somebody brings up the Lindsey Clancy trial, it always goes somewhere else. It starts there. Lindsey Clancy, that case. Okay, yeah, well, you know, you think that, she was not responsible for what was going on in her mind. What about that Reiner kid? Remember Nick Reiner? Then the list comes out. Both of them mentally ill. Both families saw it coming. Both times the system was standing right there and didn't do a thing. Both cases end with bodies and defendant nobody's sure how they're supposed to feel about. Mental health case. That's the phrase. Three words. Mental health case. And they get stamped on both files. Must be the same, right? Now, I'll concede the true part up front because it's true. Both systems failed. Not a little. Not in some abstract policy way that shows up in a footnote 3 years later. They failed in specific rooms on specific days with specific people watching, and now you have a lot of dead people. That's where the comparison starts. It's also where it should stop, because underneath that shared phrase, these two weren't just different. They were moving in opposite directions the entire time. One of them spent 17 years walking out of rooms full of people trying to help him. That's not my characterization. It's his, in his own interviews, years before any of this happened. The other spent a few months trying to get onto one of those programs, into one of those rooms, and couldn't get anybody to keep her there longer than a day. Lindsey Clancy was a labor and delivery nurse at Massachusetts General Hospital. She delivered babies for a living. Whatever postpartum illness looks like when it walks into a room, she'd seen more of it professionally than almost anybody you know. The last time a psychiatrist sat down with her, the appointment lasted 17 minutes. Nick Reiner is charged with two counts of murder and the deaths of his parents, the director Rob Reiner, and his mother, photographer and producer Michelle Singer Reiner, at their home in Brentwood. He's pled not guilty. Authorities have never officially confirmed a motive. I'm not going to sit here and rank which one of them you should feel worse for? That's a garbage question, and it produces garbage answers. What's actually in play here, what actually matters, is which direction each of them was walking when help was on the table and who paid for it. Because help wasn't scarce in the Reiner story. Help was relentless. It came at that family year after year, and by his own account, he kept leaving it standing in the parking lot. Nobody had to go looking for it. It was already there. He told People in December of 2015 that he first went to rehab around his 15th birthday. And by his own count, he'd been through roughly 17 stays before he turned 22. The Hollywood Reporter put it at 18. He told the LA Times that same year that he'd refused to go to rehab, or that he'd regularly leave the facility to go live on the street instead. And then he said the part that gets left out of every storytelling. He told People he was homeless in Maine, homeless in New Jersey, homeless in Texas. And if he wanted to do a recovery, or he wanted to do recovery his own way, rather than the programs they were pushing at him, that being homeless was the cost. That's a man describing a decision to a reporter on the record a decade before anyone was accused of anything. Now, for everyone who thinks, oh, this is all the same, let's look at the bill for those 17 years, because somebody paid it and it wasn't him. Every bed, every intake, every flight to go get him, every court date, there's a year-long conservatorship in his history. And I want to be clear about what that actually is, because people hear that word and picture paperwork. It means a family walked into a courthouse and asked a judge to take legal control of a grown-ass adult. You don't do that over a bad year. You do that when you've run out of nearly every other option and you're frightened. And California has such a lovely system that sets it up where the second you finally do get that granted, which is rare, it fights you at every nook and cranny and turn you take to get that conservatorship removed. We've done many pieces on this already. I won't go into it right now, but it's a shit show. His father made a movie about it. Nick co-wrote it. Rob Reiner directed it. It premiered at a film festival with the two of them sitting there. Nick told NPR that making it was part of his recovery and that people who go through addictions of all kinds are kind of hard to love. So the character was there to show how ugly it gets. He knew. He said it out loud into a microphone with his father's name on the poster. That's the thing everybody gets wrong about him. In both directions, he isn't sick or selfish. He's both tangled together for 17 years with everybody around him bankrupting themselves, trying to work out which one they were dealing with on any given Tuesday. Pick one and you got a story that fits on a graphic. Hold both and you got what that family actually lived in. Then came the filing from a cell in Twin Towers. Nick Reiner filed a petition in probate court asking a judge to release the trust his parents created for him. Variety and NBC reported it at more than $1.5 million. Rolling Stone put it at 1.7. According to the petition, he wanted it to rehire attorney Alan Jackson and to buy basic support items at the jail commissary. Socks, hygiene products. The two people who set that money aside are the two people he's charged with killing. The petition includes a line, I'll read exactly as written because leaving it out would be dishonest. It says, quote, Nick loved his parents and he is devastated by their deaths. That line's in the court record right alongside everything else. Now, let's walk across the country and watch somebody who was going the other way. Nobody was ever pushed at Lindsay Clancy. She went looking from a house on Summer Street in Duxbury with three kids in it. Cora was 5. Dawson was 3. Callan was 8 months old. Whatever she was doing to find help, she was doing it in between feedings and school runs, and a baby who wouldn't sleep. Her lawsuit says she sought care at a postpartum depression program in late December of 2022. The providers there noted her symptoms might be coming from her own medication. They told her to taper off the antipsychotic. Then they discharged her after one day. One day, she checked herself into a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Eve, stayed a few days, and went back to her psychiatrist after that because it took days for a doctor to see her. Her attorney, Kevin Reddington, has said she'd been prescribed up to 12 different medications after the birth of her third child. And he's called that level of medication horrific. Part of why nobody caught it is how rare this thing is. Experts covering her trial put postpartum psychosis at roughly 1 to 2 women out of every 1,000 who give birth. Most people will never knowingly meet someone who had it, which means most clinicians aren't looking for it. Most families have no idea what they're watching. And the woman in the middle of it has no framework for what's happening to her. And she was a professional. She had the vocabulary. She knew which building to walk into. She knew what words to use when she got there. She knew what the intake questions were going to be because she'd been on the other side of them. She did everything a person is supposed to do, and the system took one look and handed her back her car keys. Her husband, Patrick, testified that nobody ever told him not to leave the children with her. Consider what that means procedurally. She'd just been in a psychiatric hospital. She was on a stack of meds. And the man living in that house with her and the 3 kids under 6 was never handed a single instruction about any of it. You know, you're good. She's good. There's a part of this that never gets said next to the Reiner story. Lindsay Clancy and Patrick Clancy both filed lawsuits accusing her medical providers of failing to properly diagnose and treat her condition. There are name parties. There are clinicians who signed a discharge on a specific afternoon and a prescriber who built that medication list and a program that looked at a woman describing what she was describing and decided one day was enough. That's not a system failing in the abstract. That's a set of decisions with signatures. One man had help brought to him for 17 years and walked out of it. One woman went and got it herself and was out the door in 24 hours. Those aren't the same failure. They're not even the same kind of failure. And there's a piece of the Reiner story almost nobody has picked up, which is what the state did when it was finished with him. The conservatorship expired in 2021. Nobody revoked it. Nobody litigated it. There was no hearing where a judge weighed evidence and decided he'd recovered. It just runs out. That's how it works in California. The way a registration runs out when nobody checks the date. And when it lapsed, the state effectively handed a 32-year-old man, whose records reportedly include a schizophrenia diagnosis, back to the only 2 people still holding him. 2 people in their 70s. 4 years later, they were dead in that Brentwood house, and he was in custody by 9:15 that night. Court filings say siblings Jake and Romy Reiner had initially agreed to pay Alan Jackson's fees and then reversed. ABC News reports it isn't publicly known why. I'm not going to guess at their reasons. Well, I might. Because their brother's a fucking piece of shit. But the fact stands on its own. The family that had carried this for 17 years decided enough was enough. The trustee's position complicates all of it. According to Variety, trustee Paul Kanin has been unwilling to release the money over what were described as unresolved concerns about Reiner's capacity to make sound decisions and adequately protect his own interests. A new trustee, Jody Montgomery, has since been appointed. So the man holding the checkbook is saying the same thing the conservatorship said, that he can't be trusted to manage himself. He can't hold up a filing as proof of what he takes from people and then ignore that the person controlling the money says he isn't competent to be asking. Which brings me back to the people making the comparison and why it survives. Illinois is the only state in this country that passed a law giving special consideration to mothers with postpartum mental illness who kill their children. The 2018 statute doesn't create a charge and it doesn't create a defense. It lets a judge treat postpartum depression or psychosis as a mitigating factor at sentencing. After a guilty finding, it lets women already serving time petition for resentencing if nobody weighed those conditions the first time. There's a bill in front of the Massachusetts legislature that would do something similar. One state. That's the entire national response to this. And nobody has written a single line or law for a man in
his 30s with a long addiction history and a psychotic disorder, because that man isn't a category anybody has decided to legislate for. He's a headline for a week and a problem for his family for two decades. Filing both of these under the same three words is exactly how that stays true. If they're one problem, they get one conversation. One conversation produces one law, and one law only ever fits one of them. Let's go back to the 17 minutes. That was the length of Lindsay Clancy's last appointment with her psychiatrist. On January 23rd, 23, according to her lawsuit, 17 minutes isn't an evaluation. It's barely a check-in. It's enough time to confirm a name, ask how medication's going, and write the next prescription. It's a cattle call. The following day is when her lawyers say she heard a voice telling her this was her last chance. 17 minutes. On one coast, on the other, a court ordered that lapsed in 2021 because nobody was watching a calendar. Fix the first one and the second one still happens. Fix the second one and the first one still happens. There's no single reform, no single hearing, no single piece of legislation that really touches both, because they aren't one problem with two faces. They're two problems that got handed the same three words: mental health problem. And they're not the same thing. Not one of these five people died of a diagnosis. Every one of those deaths sits at the end of a chain of ordinary decisions made by people who have names in buildings that have addresses on days that are written down somewhere in a file. Those people can be found. They can be asked what they were looking at and what they decided and why they decided it. Talking about these two cases as one story, as if they're equal, is how every last one of them stays anonymous. These are not the same story. I can't think of another Lindsay Clancy type story, quite honestly, that goes to the depths and the degrees that this one does. There are others out there, certainly, that are far more similar than Reiner. But anytime we're talking about mental health stories, it is not one size fits all. And understanding that, understanding this case, requires the homework, requires the understanding, if you're going to have an honest, educated opinion about it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation right there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.